the bracha of Geula. I want to go over the basics that we have to know in terms of preparing the house for Pesach. As Hashem, I hope a little bit at the end, just to talk about some basic requirements for the Seder as well. If after each part I have questions, please feel free to ask the questions at that time. I think it will come out clearest in that fashion. So, let's begin in the following manner. To kasher the house for Pesach, that's one thing. They sell the tickets for the lottery, a dollar and a dream. I have a dream. My dream would be that I have a Pesach house. That's it, that I use, for 2 weeks a year. Turnkey. I just walk in, everything is in the right place. Spend Yom Tov there, clean it up, lock the house, and go out and go to my other house for 50 weeks a year. That's my dream. But it's still a dream. I didn't win the lottery yet. But, there's still time before Yom Tov. It could still happen, But since it hasn't happened, and we have to figure out how to prepare for Yom Tov under the prevailing circumstances. Now, if you want, Pesach is a time of great benevolence. So on the night of the Seder, you could wait outside and they say, Kol Dichmin, you could knock and go in. That's one way that you could prepare. But other than that, let's consider how we need to prepare for Yom Tov. So the place I always begin is the stovetop, for obvious reasons. There are two things that we need to kasher. It's heat, dry heat, and hot water, and wet heat. And the only way to produce hot water is to kasher the stovetop. So that's where we have to start. Now the stovetop, the biggest problem with the stovetop is preparing it for kashering, it's not the kashering itself. We need to get it clean. In whatever fashion we get it clean, but we need to get it clean. Now, the underneath areas are not super essential that they be 1,000% clean. We don't want, tons of chametz down there. We ought to clean them out, but we don't have to go crazy in the parts underneath the stove, and searching out every speck of chametz under there. Remember that whatever falls down there is not coming back up again. So we don't want a lot over there. We don't want anything smoldering anyhow down there. But other than that, it's not a place that we have to be very worried. But the stovetop itself has to be clean. Now, the question is, how to kasher the stove after we get the stovetop clean? So let's consider that we have either gas or electric stoves. And the electric stoves are about as easy as they could be. Just put them on the highest heat. In about 2 minutes, they'll be kosher. Because the halacha states we don't need them to turn red hot. Long before them, they're actually kosher. If you want to really be sure, take a piece of aluminum foil and throw it on the top after it's been on for a few minutes. In about 30 seconds, it'll turn red hot, which is overkill. It's more than you need. And then take that and throw it on the next burner, the next burner, the next burner, and you'll be finished. So electric is very, very easy to kasher. Gas is a little bit more difficult, but not much more so. Not much more so. And that is, you have to take aluminum foil and do it either one or two burners at a time. So otherwise, you're going to wind up singeing the enamel in between. And just put it a piece which is big enough to cover the grate. That's all. On one or two burners. Tent it up a little so that the flame doesn't burn through it, and put the flame just below the aluminum foil, and put it on for about 15 minutes, and the grate is kosher. And the reason is the grates, we are particularly lenient in koshering the grates, because the Rama actually tells, the halacha actually states, to fulfill the halacha, we have, Klal Yisrael has accepted many chumras upon ourselves, stringencies, particularly in Hilchos Pesach. But if you want to fulfill the letter of the law, and the letter of the law is very simple. If I go to the house of a non-Jew, and he takes a pot which has lokshen and chazer in it, and he cooks it on his grate, and then he takes it off there, and then I put down my pot of chicken soup, on Pesach, I can take it and serve it at the Seder. It's 100% kosher. That's the halacha. I'm not suggesting, you know, that you try that. You know, your wife will chase you out of the house, but that's, you want to know if you actually have, you're not in violation of the halacha. We have stringencies that we bother to kasher altogether the greats. But whatever we do, we don't have to, overkill is not the place wherever it's necessary. Because anything that we're doing is a chumrah in the first place. From the strict letter of the law, as long as it's clean, there's nothing on it. It was used today for chametz and treif. I can put my Pesach dika chicken soup on it and eat it tonight at the Seder and I'm fine. Now, the problem is twofold. If you have a glass top, I don't know what to tell you. I have no solutions for you, in all honesty. I'm still yet, how to kosher a glass top without causing them to break is a problem. They're not so easy to cover. If you cover them, the intensity of the heat tends to crack them. I came, as I mentioned, every year to the house of one of my friends, and he put a blech on it on Shabbos. I came there Sunday, and he showed me his blech was between the stovetop was somewhere between 1,000 and 3,000 pieces. It just disintegrated from the heat. So I do not know how to tell you how to kosherize a glass top. I have no idea. And part of the problem is a halachic dimension besides a practical dimension. The halachic dimension is that any time that we're afraid the equipment is going to get ruined, why? Subjecting it to the kashering process, I cannot kasher it in the first place. Because we're concerned that I won't do it properly. Because I'll fudge, because I don't want it to break. So I don't know what to do with glass tops. I have no solution for that.
Just cover it.
What? You can't. The heat. The heat can kill them. That's the problem. When you cover it, the heat can kill them. They're not made for the types of heat. What happens when you cover them, it contains a tremendous amount of heat. So ovens are not designed to work that way. They are designed to be with a lot of air around them and to release the heat into the air, that you don't have trapped heat. That's the way they're designed to work. When you use them the way we do, you subject them to a tremendous amount of heat. You cause everything underneath to melt, the connections melt, whatever. There's nothing that stands up to what we do to it.
Changing the grates?
You could change, if you can get maybe different grates altogether. In other words, take the whole glass top, that piece, and change it, you know, that you could do for Pesach.
The glass too, or just the grates?
The glass too. The glass also has to be changed. That's part of the problem. So if you could replace... Probably, if you have a glass top, you should do whatever the Israeli does. You know, the Israelis sometimes they know how to live well. All my relatives in Israel, none of them kasher the stovetop for Pesach. Every single one of them that buys a stove bought another stovetop for Pesach. So they basically, what they do is they detach the stovetop that's there the whole year. They put on a Pesach to go on, and they're ready to go. After Yontif, they take it off again, put back the chametz to go on. Stovetops, I don't know any of my relatives in Israel that kasher them. You know, they invested it one time and they have it for the rest of their life. They're a million miles ahead of us. But, you know, they're practical sometimes. Now, the rest of the stovetop, other than where the pots go on, has to be covered with something. The materials that it's made from are not really, there's no way that we can kasher them. Whether used, typically they're made of enamel, which we can't kasher for Pesach. I wouldn't even recommend trying to kasher them if you have one. If you have a stainless top in your house, I wouldn't try to tell you how to kasher it, because it's not so easy to kasher, because inevitably on a stovetop you put hot pots down. And once you put hot pots down, the process of kashering is a difficult process. The home stoves are not designed for that process, and we're not trained in that process. And the materials around the stove that we have in a home are not designed to use the types of heat that you use in commercial settings. Commercial settings where you do kasher such things do not have light stainless. They have very heavy cast steel tops in commercial stoves. The areas in general tend to be larger and less subject to being damaged by extreme degrees of heat. And the people that do it are professionals that are doing it. So even if you have a stainless steel stovetop, I would still tell you, cover it over. Get either very thick aluminum foil. It's very, very thick. The Israeli, also they said they bring it from Israel. It's almost like aluminum sheeting. That's how thick it is. It's still a little bit flexible. And if you're not using something that thick, you're probably best off on the stovetop to cover it twice. Because otherwise it's going to tear through and you're going to have problems. The thick ones, yeah, they sell in Goldbergers. There could be other stores even here now that sell them in some of the stores. They started bringing it from Israel about the last year or two. Before that, it was.
That's heavy aluminum foil from Israel.
Yeah, it's a roll. It costs about $9 or something, $6, $9, something like that. It's a small roll and it's very, very thick. It's much thicker than, it's almost like aluminum sheeting, except it's a little bit flexible still. Now, let's go on. Yes.
Okay. You cover the
panel. Oh, you can't. Well, you have to leave at least the buttons uncovered. And do remember, please, do not cover up the vents. If you cover the vents.
I covered
the vents. Yeah, and you may have to.
I fried my computer.
Yeah. You can fry the computer, and you might fry the oven too. So
I did.
Yeah. So it's always, if you want to get your husband to buy you a new oven after Pesach, it's a good trick. But do not cover the vents. You have to make sure not to cover the vents. Yeah.
What if you have continuous grates? How can you cash it? Or could you?
You mean flat?
But they cover the whole.
Same thing.
Whole
stovetop. You have to cover the whole stovetop.
No. When you're cashing, you said make a tent over the flame.
Whatever. You don't have the direct flame on those. You're not going to usually. No, those usually just have steel metal on the top, right? You don't have. So those, you don't have a problem. You can put the aluminum foil flat on it won't burn through.
Turn on all the burners and then
You can do, just keep an eye, don't disappear for too long, but you put aluminum foil on it and you'll have no problem. Because the problem is that the flame burns through the aluminum foil. But in those type of stoves, it doesn't. I mean, you have no idea the amount of heat that you can produce on a stovetop. In commercial settings, they use something that's very nasty. I would never recommend for your house. That they take all the oven grates, all the racks from the ovens in a commercial setting, and they pile them up on a steel stovetop with open flames. They cover it with aluminum foil, and they put it on for an hour and a half, and the whole thing turns red. I would never recommend you doing such a thing in your house, but the amount of heat you can actually produce is nasty. Yes.
Yeah. How, when you sit for the gas stovetop and you do the tent, how high does it? Because you're doing the tent for 15 minutes. How high of the heat does it have to be? Does it have to be on the highest? Or
it doesn't have to be. It just it should reach the grate area.
The
flame.
Yeah, medium.
As long as it reaches the grates. I want the tent to be a little above that, so the flame doesn't directly hit it. Yeah.
On the electric stovetop, do I have to put the tin foil on it?
No, you don't. Just put it on for a few minutes. It's not necessary at all.
A few minutes, like
2 or 3
minutes?
Yeah, usually. So then however long it takes in your stovetop for it to get really hot, that's enough.
Doesn't have to be red hot.
No, it does not have to be red hot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to the continuous grates. So the whole stovetop has one, like it looks like one big grate.
Yeah, yeah.
So I put one piece of tin foil on
yeah.
the whole thing at one time.
That's it.
The tent?
Yes. You don't even need a tent because the flame won't hit it. It won't burn it through. 15 minutes and you're fine. Yeah. Okay. Now, ovens. Ovens are practically the biggest challenge because the halachas are difficult and the cleaning is difficult. I mean, the first thing you need to do is to get them clean. Now, that's even if you have a self-cleaning oven, you don't want to self-clean it when it's dirty. Because otherwise you may be calling the fire department. You know, one guy that I know, he forgot to clean it before he put it on self-clean, and all of a sudden he had flames shooting out of the vent. So fortunately he's a gadget type of guy, so he took his fire extinguisher and he put it out. And he was all right, you know, he just had some soot to clean up the night before Yom Tov, but not a very good idea. So you do want to clean them out before you put the self-cleaning on. You know, you can use a spray cleaner. Do not put your head in the oven. And a good investment is to buy yourself a pair of goggles for a few dollars in the hardware store to protect your eyes. Because that's very, very nasty stuff, Khalil, if it gets into your eyes. It can do a lot of damage. So pair of goggles, a good pair of gloves, and spray it, let it stay, whatever, and then clean it out. And after it's clean, then, and that's even if it has a convection oven in the back to clean the fan area as well, then put the oven on self-cleaning for 3 hours. And leave the racks inside. They may discolor, but nothing worse than that's going to happen to them. They will be cleaner than you've seen them in a long time. Yeah, it doesn't make a difference, because when you finish, everything's parv. So put all the racks in, put it on for 3 hours. There's no need to. You're subjecting them to overkill. You know, I can't tell you what's going to happen. I know someone that decided he wanted to do overkill, and he sent his grates to someone to get them torched, and they torched them, and they melted them also. You know, so there's no need to do it. That's what I told you. They probably will survive, but I can't promise you that they will, and there's no need. You're doing something that's totally unnecessary.
What about the door?
Oh, now what about the door? But, okay, so that's, let me get to that. In and of itself, I do not believe you have to cover the doors and self-cleaning ovens. However, what has emerged personally as a matter of concern is the fact that a lot of times what happens is during the year the fumes seep into the door itself, and in between the glass, the outer glass panel and the inner glass panel, you can see it's dirty. That being the case, I certainly feel it's preferable, I don't know if mandatory, but certainly preferable to cover the glass part. And personally, that's what since I noticed that it's dirty in there, I put a wrap aluminum foil around the door from the outside over the glass and out again the outside, so that the glass should not be exposed inside. Now, if a lot of times if you look at the glass, because I presume what happens in time that the seals probably give out somewhat, and they're not as good as they used to be when it first came. And what happens is you're getting fumes, and now oily fumes are penetrating into the door itself. And if you observe the glass on your oven in between the two panels of glass, the outer one and the inner one, there are two, you'll see that it's dirty inside. Now, if you want to take the thing apart and clean the whole thing out, you know, you probably can succeed in doing it, not an easy task. Just a lot easier.
You're going
to
break the seal off.
Yeah, the seal will certainly be broken then. So you're certainly a lot better off just wrapping a heavy-duty sheet of aluminum foil from one side of the door over the glass and out the other side of the door, so that it's covered, and that's what I do for that reason.
Does that go around
in
front of the blanket
also? Which, the edge? No, I'm not. The thermal blanket's really outside the oven. I'm not so concerned about. No, however it stays on. I'm only concerned about the inside. The outside doesn't bother me. But it closes, don't worry about it. It closes, don't worry about it. Now, one more thing first before we go forward. Two more things, and then we'll get to the questions. If you don't have a self-cleaning oven, which now includes less and less people, you know, typically probably almost the only ones that still have non-self-cleaning ovens are those people that live in apartments. If you live in a house, almost everyone buys a self-cleaning oven today for this reason. It's just a lot more flexible in terms of milchix and fleishix a whole year, and for Pesach especially. I mean, I don't know anyone that calls me that wants to buy a new stove for the house that buys one that's not self-cleaning. It just doesn't happen anymore. But in case you still have one of them, so after you've burned, you should put it on the highest heat for about an hour and a half. And it's a chumrah to put a pan of hot water on the bottom while you're doing it. That's a chumrah, and it's not really 100% necessary in this context because of the fact that I am machmir on the non-self-cleaning ovens to cover the inside anyhow. So a whole year, for example, if you're kashering a tray for stove and you're going to use it open, so I'm concerned with the chumrah of putting a pan of water on the bottom. And Pesach is really not necessary because I'm machmir, I'm not from the Mekilim in this Shiloh. I mean, there was a classic machlekes in this shayla, which in our times played out as a machlekes between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Aaron Kotler, Zichronim Levrocha, about what's necessary to kasher an oven for Pesach. And consequently, this is one of the halachas that all the Lakewooders are equal about. It's one of the few coolest that they have. There's this halacha that Rav Aaron told them, you can put the oven on the highest heat, and it becomes kosher, it's kosher to Pesach, and it's fine. And you find even, for example, Rav Heinemann is a Talmud of Rav Aaron also. That's his shita. Sometimes he's more machmer, he's been and said he only wants you to do this before Yontif, not on Yontif itself. That was sort of an in-between shita, but this is where all. And the second one is Rav Moshe Feinstein's Atzal, who said that that does not suffice to kasher the ovens in that fashion. And this is a classical machlokas. The roots of this machlokas go back hundreds of years. It has to do with the understanding of what libun is. Is libun a process of Kabbalah Kach Polto for those technically minded, or a process of Sreifa? But that's the in the technical side of how it is. Consequently, for Pesach a machmer like the Shita of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and therefore I tell everyone to cover the inside of your oven. Now, I've done it many times before. We had a self-cleaning oven, so I can tell you that it works. Is you take a heavy-duty aluminum foil and you make a U. You start on one side, you go around from the side, around the back, and around the other side, and you need to give yourself in the height a nice amount of foil, because in the area of the tracks where the racks rest upon, you need enough to be able to press them in very, very closely to the walls, tightly and smoothly without their tearing. So you need a lot in the height because you're going to have it pressing in. Once you have the sides on, then it's you could put, at the beginning you could obviously cover the bottom before you put on the sides. Once you have the sides on, then you could put a piece that will stay up supported by the sides on the top and cover the door on the inside. It takes some time. It's not terribly difficult to do. But the only piece of advice I can give you is then when I put the racks in, we'll come to the racks in a moment. The racks, if you have a non-self-cleaning, you should give to one of your friends that has a self-cleaning oven, have them do the racks for you for 3 hours. Now, when I had a non-self-cleaning oven, I very, very gently put the racks in before Pesach, smoothing down the aluminum foil to make sure that it didn't tear. And once the racks were in, I did not move them for the rest of Pesach. The pots my wife took out, but we didn't pull the racks in and out, because if you do that, you're going to tear the aluminum foil whole to smithereens. So that's what you ought to do if you have a non-self-cleaning. Okay, I think I've told now. Oh, broilers are basically the same as ovens. You should clean them, put them on for about an hour and a half, and put the racks, if you use the racks directly for food, you should put them in a self-cleaning oven. Okay, any questions about this part? Yes?
We have an oven that has vents on the top of the door.
On the top of the
door. Is that a problem? And there is stuff in there, but I see that it's not clean inside there. You can't really cover that up.
The vent is, but it's not in the, it's usually that vent's the outside. It's not in the stove itself. It's not in the place where you're cooking. Yeah.
For whatever reason, they put those vents on the door. Yeah, inside.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'd have to see it to tell you. I would, I think, be soimach on the fact of burning it up and presuming that nothing more is going to happen from that after that. But I would like to, I'd have to see it to tell you. It's just for a safety matter. It's not really, you know, if you want it to work well, have it scrubbed out well, then the self-cleaning will work properly. It won't make a fire. It's both.
So
yeah.
How about the knobs? Especially
the knobs. But the knobs is good to take and put them, soak them in a little bit of aluminum and water overnight. I mean, ammonia and water overnight. And that's all. And wash them clean and that's all. So there is a myelin covering them if you can cover them. You can't always cover them or get different ones. There is a mila, I'm not telling you a chiv, because sometimes we put hot pots directly on them the whole year.
What about covering the wall and
the... Yeah, the splashbacks in general in the kitchen, behind the stove especially, should be covered. And the oven hood, you should cover over for Pesach.
It's got nothing to hold on.
What?
It's got no hole or anything to be able to attach it to.
Buy yourself, they have the blue painter's tape. Yeah, they sell in the hardware stores. That does the least amount of damage to anything. What? I don't think it's going to peel off. You're talking on top. When you're talking on the oven top, on the vents. Yeah, yeah. You put it on the sides. It should last. Yeah, it'll stay. It will stay. Yeah.
If you have, I guess, an oven door on the inside, there's streaks that it's not totally clean, and just accumulations over the years and baked in. So you just have to.
So run the self cleaning and then cover it, and that's all.
That's all. You should cover it.
If you it probably burns up. I don't imagine there's anything not burned up after you subject it to a 3-hour cycle. And it doesn't sound like the first cycle is such that it's gone through. So that's burned up. Carbon is not chametz. Okay. Yeah.
What if you're something that has a typical cycle with 1 or 3 hours? 4 hours.
So use it for 4. 3 is the minimum.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Just clean it with ammonia and don't worry about it. Take ammonia, use a cleanser on it, and you could then afterwards, there's no chametz that's going to be edible anymore.
That's
so
the
it's
gas.
Yeah.
The vents in the back, where I was talking about, like a 12-pound, those do get dirty. They're filled up in.
Yeah, listen, clean them again with some cleanser, and after that, I wouldn't worry about it. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever, if you see it's dirt, whichever one you want, it doesn't make a difference.
If you self-clean every 3 hours and then you still see some slight stains,
if it's burned up, then it's not a problem. If it's not burned up, then you have to scrub them and put it on again. But usually they're going to be burned up. If it was very heavy, sometimes they will not burn up. That's why you're better off if it's relatively clean when you start. Yeah. If it's not 100% clean, would be a problem. But if you use something like ammonia and water, so I would be samech to be meiko. Because even if it's not 100% clean, whatever's left there could not trafe you up in Pesach. Okay, now. Sinks. Let's talk about sinks. Sinks are time consuming to kasha, but they're not difficult to kasha. Sinks for our purposes, there are stainless sinks and non-stainless sinks. If you have a stainless sink, then all you need to do is to take hot water, boil the kettle up, and pour hot water slowly all up and down the walls of the sink. Just pour the stream, let the stream go up and down inch by inch, and let the stream directly go on each part. It'll take you a few kettles worth of water to do it, and include that in the spout. Yeah, the spout you have to do, and that's also fine. Now, the plug that you use on the bottom, you want to replace for Pesach, and pour over the spout. And if you have a strainer in the spout that unscrews, so replace that for Pesach too. Now, the spritz, it depends. Tubing is made of non-metal, then you shouldn't kasher it for Pesach. Close it up. If the tubing is made of metal, then you can pour hot water on the tubing, up and down the tubing and the head, and use the spritz on Pesach. So that's the basic story. Now, if you put hot pots directly into the stove, that's a matter of your style, how you operate it, then you really have to do a whole different process of kashering besides the one that we've mentioned, which is very, very difficult to do in your house. I mean, if you're very adept, you could succeed in doing it. Basically, what you have to do is to have the water boil directly on the sink itself. So there are two ways you can achieve that. You can achieve that, they have immersion coils, which all can boil up the whole sink. You plug them in and fill up the sink with water, and they'll make all the water in there boil eventually. And then it's one way to do it. And the other way to do it, and you have to be very adept to do it that way. And if you're the very adept type, you can take a stone or a piece of metal and put it in the fire on an open flame and get it very hot, and then pour water on the stove, on the sink top. Pour water on the sink top and then follow it with the hot stone or the hot piece of metal. It's a difficult process, which unless you're very adept, I don't recommend that you do. Now, if you're not 100% sure if you put hot pots down or not, then you don't bother with the Evan Reuven, just dump hot water. The Beis Meir quoted in the Shaar HaTzion says that even the Rambam would consent that if there's a reason that you can't do the Liban Kal or with the Evan Reuven, it's enough just to do it according to Rov Tashmisha. You don't have to be Machmar according to Meir Tashmisha. So if you're not sure if you put hot pots in it, then just dump the hot water and it's fine. Now if you have a non-stainless steel sink, you should still dump the hot water, but then you have to cover it with something, whether a commercial liner or a foil liner, whatever. The foil liners work just as well as the commercial ones. And they cost you less money and they're easier to get rid of after Pesach.
Before you pour the oil and hot water on the stainless steel sink, you have to wait at any time before?
Oh, should you wait, yeah. But you before you kosher anything with wet heat, you are supposed to wait 24 hours that you don't use hot water there. So before cold water you can. So you should close the hot water in the sink 24 hours. Now I suggest that the way you close it is find the check valve of the sink and close it. Because if you don't close it, you're going to find out after 23 and a half hours, your kid's going to come in there and turn the hot water on. And you're going to be scratching your head, what do I do next? So just close the check valve, climb under the sink and close the check valve. And then you'll know for sure that nobody's dumping hot water in there for 24 hours before. And after that, now down the drain, you should dump a little bit, something like ammonia or bleach. Not both of them.
Is that before the 24 hours?
When?
The ammonia.
When it doesn't make a difference. Don't put ammonia and bleach together. That's all the guys don't approve.
What? A brick with the handles.
The what?
A brick.
I don't like it, that brick. I don't think it's properly designed. I think they erred in designing it because the brick has to directly touch the floor of the sink, and the way it's designed, it doesn't. The brick is on the bottom. It has metal under it holding the brick up. It is poorly designed from my perspective. So, I don't know who designed it and who signed off on it, but I think they did it wrong.
Is it kosher?
What?
Yeah. Is it
kosher?
Sure.
Yeah.
On the wall of the sink, you also
have
to move over inch by inch. The walls are
kind of
hard to...
You just go up and down with the kettle.
So, the top, like,
so you move the as you move the kettle, you can redirect, you know.
It's hard to get it at the very top.
It'll spill a little on the floor, don't worry.
No, you know. That's not what I meant. To actually pour it onto the top portion is hard.
Right. Oh, on top of it.
Kind
of
like
you gotta get it underneath that big question mark up and thing. You know, the sink is shaped like a U, the whole
thing. What, under the spout?
Yeah, spout.
Spout, you just take it and you go. Just.
Right.
You just direct up, that's all. You just splash up.
But the water isn't running then, you're just doing it when it's not running.
Yes, of course.
No, because somebody once said that the hot water had to be on.
No.
Most of these spouts pull out.
Oh, it depends. That's the spritz type one. That's one type, but the ones that are solidly in place, you can't pull them out.
So the spritzer, if you change the head and put a piece of the head on, the wire is usually metal.
Yeah, if the wire is metal, they have more and more metal wires. They're changing to metal rather than plastic or rubber.
So if I change the head to plastic, it's fine.
Yeah.
The filter has to be changed, don't?
Which filter? Yeah, they are in the faucet filter, yeah.
Faucet.
Yeah. Yeah, Ronnie.
Going back to the living towel, if you have a rack normally on the bottom of your sink, which you take away for Pesach, so if you ever put hot pots on there, it's not going to be on the sink directly.
Then it's fine.
But
it's not a problem.
But you have to worry that maybe it touches.
No, the that you don't need. I told you, since it's a chumra ba'alma, you don't have to worry. No worries. All worries canceled out. If you call me with shyness and worries, for worries I charge $200 an hour. That's it, you know. Rabbinical questions. Listen, I follow Moshe Rabbeinu. Ma'am ato v'chinam, you know, that we have to teach Torah to the Rosh Hashanah. But for anxieties, I charge $200 an hour. So, you know.
What about blowtorch in this famous field? What about blowtorch instead of a rock?
Listen, don't bring a blowtorch to your house. These things are not designed for it. And the kitchen environment is not a good environment for it. I wouldn't recommend that you know, if you're a real professional type and you're not hung up, you know, you might do it. But, you know, I wouldn't recommend it. It's not something. What?
If you were to place a hot, very hot pot on the lip of the sink, which is one piece really to the rest of it,
I would worry less. I don't know if I would be machmer on the whole sink because of that. I would just cover that part over.
Or do that piece,
yeah. I think that would. Yeah.
When you talk about the end of the faucet, are you talking about a filter on the end of the faucet?
Yeah, it's one.
Or if my faucet came with, every faucet has that screw on it.
No, I'm talking something, there's a filter on the end of some faucets.
Well, but every faucet has like that.
Whatever, but not everyone. Some of them is part of the faucet, and some it's a removable filter that screws in and out. So then, yeah, for not for a dollar about in the town, you could buy a new one. Okay. Countertops, for countertops, the basic approach to countertops is you have to clean them and you have to cover them well and cover the splashbacks around your countertops. That's the basic approach. Now, anything more that you want to do than that is extra credit and not really necessary. You know, you can tabon if you want to pour, since you're covering them, you don't really have to kasher them. You don't have to pour out water on them. It's enough to wash them and to cover them. If you have real stone, I'm not talking about compound stone, but real stone, whether it's marble, whether it's granite, then assuming that you don't put hot pots directly on it, then you can just kasher it by pouring hot water all over it, and then you can use it for Pesach uncovered. If you put hot pots on it, then you're back to where you were before, so then just wash it and cover it. So the choice is yours according to your lifestyle, how it works.
She's still kosher, right, if you put hot water on it, right?
If what?
If you have a rubber countertop full mic
and you can pour it. Yeah, but you still have to cover it anyhow. So I did, but as I said, it's not a chiyuv. The main thing is to wash it and to cover it well. But I'm not telling you to stop. There is a mila in case you happen to hit it by accident. You won't have shilas on Pesach. So there is a mila. Now tables of yeah.
I thought I was being asked here when I was covering the splashbacks of any countertops that I use by like hot things like the shalafa, but ones that I are like far away with only a paper towel. Is there any reason I should cover splashbacks?
The splashback, you need to have to cover in places where you work with food. That's where you should cover it. That's it. If it's a place you don't work with food, you don't need to cover it. Now, refrigerators, basically, you just have to wash them clean.
No,
it's tabletops. Oh, tabletops. Clean them and cover them, and that's it. That's all you have to do with them.
You have to clean the cracks.
You should, if it has, you know, we do try to get the chametz out of the house. So if it's a table which opens up, expands, so you should open it up. And that usually in that crack, there's a lot of chametz that gathers over the whole year and clean it out.
The chias too.
What?
The chias have cracks.
whatever you want to clean around the chairs, that's fine. Otherwise, just make up that any food that falls down there, you won't eat on Pesach, and you're all right, you know? No, you don't have to. There is no ischaivus to clean out a mashu of chametz. It's a ischaivus not to eat a mashu of chametz, or not to clean out a mashu of chametz. Yes.
Let's say you always keep your table covered and you never open it, so you need to pull it open?
Yeah, you probably should pull it open because you probably will find that sometimes there's dirt in there anyhow. It's in the course of a whole year, it manages to get there. Has feet. No, just wash them well and that's all. Now, if... Two things. Let me finish with refrigerators. You should basically, the basic thing is to wash them off, and that's enough. If you want to cover them, that certainly you get extra credit for that, but it's not a chiyuv. However, if you put hot pots directly into the refrigerator, then you should cover them for Pesach.
How hot is hot?
Hot means yatzal edus. So if it's over 120 degrees, when you put it in, that's hot. Now, crack pots, don't even think about koshering them for Pesach. Yes.
You don't need more than one covering on the table?
Usually you're going to have more. You're going to put something underneath and how many tablecloths on top of that. So, you know, you're not going to have only one covering on a table, practically. You're going to wind up with two is certainly enough.
Like cardboard, it could be two
tablecloths. One of them should be on the thicker side, preferably.
Is it different if you put paper or cardboard and then a tablecloth?
As I said, you could put what you were something underneath to cover it. You know, we're not talking other than a table. We don't just put a tablecloth, you know. I guess just to make sure that it doesn't get uncovered, in case something hot gets on there, that the hot liquid can't get through to the other side, whatever. That's why I presume is the reason for it. Let's see, microwaves. If the microwaves, if you have metal insides, you could actually kasher your microwave. By scrubbing them, not using them for 24 hours, scrubbing them clean and steaming them up well inside, and they'll be kosher for Pesach. Again, the Ramosha went to follow the Royu. So since that's only a miyut, yeah. As long as you can get it clean, you're fine. Now, I just said, if you have a metal inside to a microwave, nowadays they're making ones with metal insides rather than plastic insides. If you have metal insides, then you can scrub them clean, put a cup of water inside, steam it. First, don't use it for 24 hours. Then put a cup of water inside and steam it up until you get hot steam, and then you are kosher. Till it steams up well, until you get a nice amount of hot steam, maybe 10 minutes or so. You maybe need more than one cup till you do it, but you want to steam up the inside well, and you're kosher for Pesach.
It's only metal one.
Only metal. If it's a plastic one, forget about it.
What about the glass?
No, the glass round table you have to take away. You cannot count. We follow the Ramah, we don't kasha glass for Pesach. We don't kasha glass for Pesach. That's drinking glasses, and that's almost passé in today's world. And the level that we live on, we shouldn't be too involved in that either. Yeah. And listen, in those days, nobody bought dishes, new dishes. Yeah. We verstehen doch. Yeah, there were a lot of things different once upon a time. Yes. Yes.
The table pad, can we just cover that with the padding that covers your wooden table? Could we cover it with aluminum foil?
Yes.
That's
fine.
Cardboard or paper.
Now, dishwashers, you'll find a whole article about it in the OU's Pesach Jewish Action, they wrote about kashering dishwashers. The basic story is like this. If it's plastic, you can't kasher it. If it's met stainless, you might be able to kasher it, but you certainly shouldn't undertake to kasher it. You know, because you have questions with the seals, you have questions with the junk in the drain, etc. So I have a great antipathy to kashering dishwashers, you know, for that reason. So, and you'll read all about it. They said my preference is, even on the stainless steel insides, is not to kasher them for Pesach. Yeah.
Would a convection oven / microwave be the same as the microwave if it has the metal inside?
If it has a real oven?
Oh,
I don't know, I'm not...
The convection oven, I don't know, there's a different process in the cooking than the convection oven versus a...
It's a convection microwave or an oven. There's two types of things. There are ovens. There are convection ovens that have microwaves, and then there are convection microwaves, which are not ovens.
Oh, so what is it, so what's the rule on both? Because I don't know, I'll have to check the manual, but I don't know if it's called a convection oven slash microwave.
Let's find out, and then we'll... I don't want to speculate.
Yeah, we have one convection oven slash microwave. In other words, it's two separate kind of... It operates...
Separately. Yeah, so if it works as a convection oven, then you have to follow the dinim of the oven.
So you have to self-clean.
Yes, whatever, however you...
Self-cleaning.
What?
No self-cleaning.
And that, so as I say, then you're not going to be able to use it for Pesach, really. Okay.
For
what?
During the year, so
preferably I wait the 24 hours during the year to if I spill something, yeah. Now, kitchen closets, basically you need one, you have to clean them out. Now the basic story is like this. Depends what the insides are made from. If they're a real, if they're wood, and over time you can't really get them fully clean anymore, then you must line them. If they're one of the more modern finishes that you can wash and they come very clean, there's no chiyuv to, you're not obligated to cover them, and you cover them anyhow. But, so that depends really what they're made of. But if they're wood cabinets, then you should certainly clean them and cover them, because things get embedded in the wood over the years and you cannot really get them fully clean anymore. The more modern plastic type finishes
for
that
mica,
they put inside.
You don't have to,
what?
Formica
is enough to wash it out. If you want, as I say, many people cover it anyhow, but the formica you can certainly get clean.
What about the wood with the glossier, like a plastic finish?
So that's same. That's the same as formica. Not, there's no chiyuv. What can I tell you? Kashering, basically, I don't like to kasher things for Pesach. You know, in terms of utensils. Kashering is, to do it right, is a difficult process. And in private settings, there's really little need for it in the circumstances under which we live. But the only things that I tell people to kasher is if you don't have a Pesach Becher and you want to kasher your Becher for the whole year, so put it in boiling water, clean it well, put it in boiling water, and kosher it for Pesach. In a Pesach dikka pot on the fire, yes. Before Yom Tov, yeah. Shouldn't have been used 24 hours before, as anything you kasher with in hot water shouldn't be used for 24 hours before. And any time you kasher, you put in cold water right afterwards. That's basically, Rabbi Yisrael, that's the basics. I gave you all the basics. Now, I want to talk a little bit of...
Question?
Yeah.
Paper
plates, basically the ones you should use on Pesach to avoid controversy, are either styrofoam or plastic. If you're using the cheapest paper plates, are going to get you involved in some controversy. So, is there anything really usher about it? No, I don't believe that there is. But controversy you'll have. The question of selling chametz gomer or not, that's a question, it's a chumrah, not a din. It's a chumrah that many observe. It stems in our contemporary times from the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was a skeptic about the efficacy of mechiras chametz because of the fact that we don't actually give it away and people know they're getting it back, etc. So the Vilna Gaon did not sell chametz. And he was even that machmer, in fact, that if anyone that chametz which had been sold on Pesach, he would not eat it after Pesach either.
I think it was like ketchup.
Now, the ketchups usually are not a problem. They're usually not chametz gomer. The typical vinegar that's in this country, and I bothered, in fact, like with the Heinz company to find out, but typically vinegar in this country is made from corn. So if you have, for example, Heinz ketchup, the vinegar in there is corn vinegar. It's not chametz in the first place.
Basically, all this could be put in a back of the refrigerator in a bag.
What's that?
Let's say unfinished bottle of ketchup.
Yeah, if you tie it in a closed bag, yeah, you could. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, double. That's what?
Gluten
free. I don't know the answer. You can have, spelt. I think is gluten free too. Okay, right? It can be. So I cannot tell you just because it's gluten-free that it has no chametz. No. That you'd have to ask the people that give the hechsher on it what's in there. I can't tell you.
The drawers that have your chametz tikka pots and your chametz tikka silverware, if the tie them shut,
yeah, any place, Rabbi Yisai, it's always wise to listen to the Achrayinu. Those holy Jews, they were a lot smarter than all of us. And when the Achrayinu write that your chametz tikka kelim, you should close them up someplace, some place that it shouldn't be accessible, they know what they knew what they were talking about. I still shudder when I remember getting a shiloh on Erev Yontif of the second days, where someone finished kasha cooking for the second day's Yontif, and they realized that they had used, I think, a blender dish. The chametz tikka blender was used instead of the Pesach tikka one because it wasn't well enough put away. So I went through everything. It came out all the food was mutter in terms of what was made. If I recall, I think it was a blender, food processor. But it was an object lesson that when the Achrayinim say, put it well away, that no one's going to take it by mistake, they knew what they were talking about. Now, I tell you every year, Rabbi Sain, I reiterated this year, the amount of effort, time, money, and more even than all of that effort that we put into making this yontif, take 5 more minutes and make sure you do it right. We go to the racking course every year from this shul. We have 2 phenomenal mashgichim from Lakewood that come and they take care of the kashas for us in the racking course. One of the things that they do is that when the workers take out of the pantry any box of food, can of food, it cannot be used. Before they open it up, they have to come and show the mashgiach, this is what I'm about to put into use. After the mashgiach says it's fine, why? Because the place is a non-kosher place during the year, and who knows what they could dig out from as much as we're clean, maybe they'll find the place that we didn't find yet. And by mistake, we're going to do it willfully, but by mistake, they'll take something non-kosher. Every single thing that's put into use cannot be put into use. You have to show the mashgiach the can, the bottle, the bag, the box. And the mashgiach says, use it. And then it's used. Other than that, it doesn't move. In your own house, do not cook anything without stopping to look 2 minutes at the label. Take the extra 30 seconds to look at the label. You don't want to be in the situation of the shaila that I had a few years back, of I got a call from someone that over somewhere in the middle of the first days of Yontif, the second day of Yontif, or the first night of Chol HaMoed, they discovered that all the gefilte fish rolls that they had bought for Yontif were chometz tikka ones, and weren't Pesach tikka ones. And that really has chometz in it, because they're using matzah mel in there, which is produced in chometz tikka fashion. It's undoubtedly that there's chametz there. And this is what they served at the Seder. This is what they cooked in all their kalim. Okay? They ordered appropriately from an appropriate vendor, kosher Pesach, 10, 15 rolls of gefilte fish. But life has its mistakes. What you want is not always what you get. You know, you ordered kosher Pesach and some worker there made a mistake and sent you non-kosher Pesach. You know, I know a man owns a commercial business. And 2 days before Yontif, he walked into the kitchen of his commercial business and he tasted the cake. And he said, the cake doesn't taste Pesachtik. You know, it just doesn't taste Pesachtik. It doesn't have the Pesach flavor to it. So we had them call up the vendor. And the vendor had sent them 2 days before Yontif in a glatt kosher commercial facility that's open for Pesach, 70 pounds of chametz tikka cake. So you need to be on your toes. Don't assume that because you ordered it and it came from a guy, whoever, you know, however frum and learned he is, mistakes happen in this world. Take the extra minute, look at the finger food, and make sure that it actually is kosher to Pesach before you put it into use. And you'll be a lot happier if you do that. Yeah.
Rob mentioned when you take it off the shelf, very often some chametzik thing can be put together with the Pesach things because somebody may have taken the chametzik, realized he made a mistake, he takes the Pesach one, and he sticks the chametzik one right there. So
happens all the time. All the time. Yeah.
Just as far as cleaning toys and toy bins, like what
is one happening? The best thing, listen, the toy bins, you should empty them and clean them out. you know, the kids can I in a horror. What I found out, I learned Masechta Pesachim. But after I learned Masechta Pesachim, then I got married. So I found out that what the kids do, the Gemara didn't even talk about, you know. And the Shas talks about places that are known not to have chametz and places that may have chametz. Once I had children, I found out that I have many places that definitely have chametz that I never dreamed of having chametz. I still remember this, and I lived in Metropolitan Avenue in Kew Gardens, so I had in the Milachik drawer. So under the silverware box, I once found a sandwich. This wasn't a Pesach, but one of the kids, you know, I guess decided, you know, they didn't want to eat the sandwich that the mother gave them. So they lifted up the silverware box and slid it underneath. This was during the year. It wasn't on Pesach. But I found out that kids are very ingenious, Kanayinaha. So other than that, the toys they're going to use for Pesach, if they're plastic, the simplest way to do it, fill up the bathtub with water, put a cleanser in, soak them overnight, rinse them off, and put them back. That's the easiest way to get to the end of the problem. I do want to... Yes? That you can sell them. That's not chametz goma. Yes.
What is the status of the alcohol in vanilla extract?
I do not know the answer. It's usually not chametz goma. It's usually, but as I said, you should find out. I don't want to say for sure. Call up the company that gave the hashgacha on it. Ask them what alcohol they used. They could have used real alcohol in that. I cannot tell you that it's a synthetic. It could be real. Yeah.
There's a underneath the cabinet, right above the countertop. Let's say you have a hot thing of soup, hot pot of soup, and the steam comes up underneath the counter. Does that underneath the cabinet need to be covered?
Again?
Or if you rest a hot soup on a counter in a pot, and the steam comes up, it's a short counter, right?
Yeah.
So the steam comes up underneath the cabinet.
So you should cover, yeah.
Washed or
yes, you should cover it also. Any place where you have hot steam is going on, you should cover. Yeah.
Is there any difference with paper towel you use?
No, it makes no difference. Preferably, you shouldn't use the sheets at the beginning and the end that have the glue on it, but that's all. Now, let me talk a little bit about Shiurim on Pesach. And I talk about first wine, and I'll talk about the shiurim of matzah and mar. Let's talk about the wine. Wine wonders me all you need. You want to be yoytze the din is to have a 3-ounce cup. That's all you need to use. Except if it's Friday night, you see, to say it is not Friday night, then you need a cup that has just about 4.5 ounces in it for the Kiddush Friday night. Other than that, you need a 3-ounce cup, and to be yaitzid din, you should drink most of that cup. If you want to be machmer, there's a basis in the halacha to be machmer, you should drink the whole cup. But there are shittas that will have shiurim up to 5 ounces, but 3 ounces, according to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and others, your yaitzi with a 3-ounce cup. It suffices. That's all you need. So particularly for those people that can't drink a great deal of wine or grape juice, whatever the reason may be, that's enough. Now what type of wine? Preferably, if you can, you should use wine and not grape juice for the Seder. And that stems from the fact that Gemara in Arvei Pesachim says there are two aspects to Yayin. One is the fact that it's Yayin, and according to the Pesach that we follow in this country, grape juice is Yayin, although not everyone does agree with that. But beyond that, the Gemara talks about that the Arba Kaisers are a celebration of Cheres, freedom. And when you celebrate victory, you don't toast with grape juice. You know. The alcohol content should be, I like about 6%. If it's about 5.5%, no, I won't quench. But, you know, I would not go lower than that. Because for the reason that in our society, it's sold as a wine cooler already, once you get down into that realm. So, to me, it lacks chshivus in terms of the derech eruv. Now, should you use wine that's mevushal, or should you use wine that's ain't mevushal? This is a very... Now, we have throughout the year, there is a chumrah that some use wine which is uncooked. And it is say the one we try on Pesach basically to fulfill things at the highest possible level. However, if you're going to have one of two things, either non-frum people at the Seder or non-Jewish help around on Pesach, then do not use Yayin that's not Mevushel. Use only Yayin Mevushel. But if you have, you know, you're only going to have frum people around, then you could use, and there is a Maila to use Yayin that is not Mevushel. Because otherwise you're going to wind up, if you use Yayin Cheino that's not Mevushel, when none from people are around, you're going to have shyness. And I still remember, I said, I was once at the Seder with the Rosh Hashanah Zatzal, Tov Shin Lamed Gimel, the second Seder, I spent the second day Yontif with the Rosh Hashanah, including the Seder. And the Rebbe in Allah Shalom had convinced some guy that came to sleep in the yeshiva after the first Seder that he shouldn't go to Tel Aviv on the first day of Yontif, and that he should be the Rosh Hashanah's guest. So he was the Rosh Hashanah's guest for the rest of the first day of Yontif, the second Seder, and the second day of Yontif. And she had not prepared for having an unfrum guest. So in the middle of the Seder, he picked up the wine and he poured it. And she rather unobtrusively appeared very shortly afterwards, and that wine bottle was whisked away, never to be seen again, you know. But that's the problems that you have. So you don't want to introduce Yayin Sheino of Hushel into a place where there are non-frum people. Now, there is a preference that wine that's red. Even the blush red, you know, is also, it's red enough. But, you know, it's a preference to use red rather than white. Now, how much matzah do you need? There's a lot of different answers to that question. I'll give you the two answers to the question, which will suffice, you know, to deal with most situations. If you're a person that's of normal appetite, normal health, then for the matzah, moitzi matzah and the afikoman, you should try to eat approximately a half of a hand shmura matzah. If, or that which equals out to about the size of one machine shmura matzah. Now for koirech, you need about a third of a hand matzah. In round numbers, about a third of a hand matzah, two thirds of a machine shmura matzah. Now they do sell this card in this forum, so it's very easy to follow the measurements. A little chart, it's very easy to use, it's colored, whatever, to make the shiurim, and it lays it out very well. Now, assuming that a person has some difficulty with that for whatever reason, you know, they can't eat that much, or health impediments, whatever they may be, a person is diabetic, is not allowed to eat so much matzah, etc. If they have health impediments, and there is a basis for such a person to eat shiurim that are half the size that I mentioned until now. But again, that's only for people that have a serious health issue. If you don't really have a health issue, so, Pesach, we go all out. You know, it's not the time, you know, to diet and not the time to eat like a pigeon. It's the time to do it right.
And regular hamotzi matzah would be a third or half? What? Regular hamotzi, regular other meals with Pesach.
A third is enough. Yes, a third is enough for me.
Just put the red wine, white wine. If I put a little red wine or white wine on top of that, so now it's all red, is that okay? Or
I don't think that that's the intention. I don't think it's only a matter of color. This, when Chazal talked about reddish wine, red wine is a different metzius chemically because of the skins. And that's known, whatever, in the world of health also, which is only the red wine protects you from heart disease, right? Because there's something in the skins, right? It's not found the white one. You'd be yotze, you know, yeah. As I say, if you use a 3 ounce cup and you drink half the cup, and you're drinking all together, you're drinking 6 ounces of wine at 6% alcohol, you haven't even gotten to a half a shot of whiskey yet. Not even about a third of a shot of whiskey. Not even. So if you keep the cup size down, most people should not have problems drinking the amount of wine that's involved. I mean, it's very, very hard to imagine that at about a third of an ounce of alcohol that anyone's getting over a whole evening with food, then anyone's getting too drunk. Now, if you're such a person, then you have to cut back a little bit. But most people, that's what I told you, keep the cups to appropriate size and you won't have problems. Now, Morel leaves, you have somewhere about the size of a sheet of paper is the size to use for leaves, if you're using the leaves. And you can buy, for example, the Gush Katif. It's already pre-washed. The most you have to do is rinse it off. It's very easy to use. You get a lot of shiurim out of it. And it's easy to ingest. And not only is it easy to ingest, but it's halachically the most preferable of all. The Mishnah gives us five things that we should use for more. And the first on that list is romaine lettuce. So why do we want to go to what's at best number three on the list, and maybe it's not on the list at all? You know, the chrein, if not for the fact that we have a tradition of a seder to use chrein, we would not, if we had to decide today, we would not use chrein at the seder. Because of the fact that our tradition is to use it, we keep on using it. But in the absence of a tradition, we would not use it at all. Because there's a great deal of skepticism if this min grew in Eretz Yisrael at the time of the Mishnah. And those that have that write on the subject insist that its identification as one of the minim in the Mishnah is mistaken. Now, halachically, we still follow our tradition, we use it. But why use something that's at best, third best, when we can use the chazeres? So we'll yoytze with that.
That's 8.5.
It's about the size of a sheet of paper. About 8 by 11, 8.5 by 11, in that range. And for the chrein, you have to use some that's a little bit more than an ounce, about an ounce, 1.1 ounces for the mor, and about 7/10 of an ounce for the kairach. And it's not so easy to get it down. You know, when I grew up in the era that we didn't have really available romaine lettuce that was clean, you know, my father, Allah Shalom, did not want to bring it into the house on Pesach. He said he's too concerned about the problem of toilon. So he'd rather not to be, you know, stick to the tradition of the chrein and not bring the romaine lettuce leaves. So we didn't do, when I grew up, we did not use romaine lettuce leaves. You know, Gush Katif we didn't have in those days. So it is a little bit hard, though, to get it down. And it's not whatever. It can also be unsettling for your stomach, etc. It's not always the best. So we can be a machmer and use the leaves. So why not be machmer and use the leaves?
Even for Kore?
Even for Kairach, yeah.
Wow.
So, you know. So, I'm appealing to you to be Machmer, one of the Chumras of Pesach. Okay, that's, I think, big. Usually it's the same, because since there's no real difficulty. Now, those people that have health issues, and there are all types of health issues, of people that are limited in what they can eat, particularly diabetes is one of the big problems that people, or those people should consult me privately in terms of advice and what to do, etc. But what I've talked about now is relatively for healthy people. Half the size, again, is for people that are able to eat that much. If you're not able to do that much, then consult with me and I'll give further advice for those that have health issues beyond that. Yeah.
Just to clarify, going back to covering the table, would like a flannel black tablecloth or a fabric tablecloth covered by another tablecloth work?
I think so. Thick, you know. Thick, not thin. Okay, now, I think that's about it for this evening. There are books, there's a box on the table near the door of the Jewish Action for Pesach. And avail yourself of a copy. There's a lot of important information, including this Zmanim for Pesach. May the Rabbeinu Shalom grant that we be Yotzei Simchas Yontif too. And Rav Scheinberg Shlita always writes that beyond everything else, we have to remember that Simchas Yontif is in many regards is a bigger mitzvah than all the anxiety-driven cleaning that we do for Pesach. So let's remember, Rabbi, to chill out a little and enjoy Yontif too. Shutting out to get on the ground.